DW Deutsche Welle. World in Progress.
On this show, Norway has the toughest immigration laws in Europe. We find out how that affects refugees and those who work with them.
I already have my refugee ID card. Now I'm just waiting for a decision from the state refugee authority. But the uncertainty is driving me crazy.
It's a special situation. Work in a refugee camp where actually most of them is not supposed to be here. It makes more trouble because they don't have anything to look forward to. So they get more depressed, angry, more sad.
And a refugee fact check. What's going on in Europe? Stay tuned. Welcome to World in Progress. I'm Anke Rasper in Bonn, Germany. Refugees and migration, that's a major topic in Europe these days, and it's causing a lot of controversy. In Germany, for instance, the current government is on the brink right now, with a row between German Chancellor Angela Merkel and politicians from her conservative sister party, the CSU, who are threatening to close the border in Bavaria. Yet in fact, the number of refugees coming to Germany and to Europe actually decreased last year. So let's take stock of what's going on. Here's Anne-Sophie Brendlin with a little fact check about refugees in Europe.
How many refugees are there in Europe?
There are currently 3.5 million refugees living in Europe, according to the International Organization of Migration, the IOM. In comparison, Africa has almost twice the amount, Asia even four times. The height of the refugee crisis occurred in 2015 and the beginning of 2016, when almost 1.2 million refugees and migrants reached European shores. Since then, the number of asylum applications in the EU has dropped by half to some 650,000 in 2017, according to Eurostat. More than 80% of the asylum seekers in 2017 were younger than 35 years old, and more than 60% were male. The majority are from Syria. Other large groups come from Afghanistan, Nigeria, Pakistan, and other countries in the Middle East and Africa.
Which countries host the most refugees?
The country with the largest amount of refugees in the world is currently Turkey, which is home to 3.1 million refugees, followed by Jordan, Lebanon, Pakistan, and Germany. Germany is hosting almost a third of all refugees in Europe, around 1.3 million, followed by France with 350,000 and Sweden with 316,000 refugees. And Germany is also the country most refugees seek asylum in. About one-third of first-time asylum applications in the EU in 2017 were registered in Germany, followed by Italy with 20%, France with 14%, Greece with 9%, and the UK and Spain with 5% each. Norway and Switzerland are not members of the EU. Both have fairly strict regulations ruling migration and asylum.
Who is allowed to stay?
To receive asylum in the EU, a person must be recognized as either a refugee, meaning a person who's fleeing persecution, war, or a natural disaster, or as a beneficiary of subsidiary protection, meaning that person would face a real risk of suffering serious harm if he or she returned to their country of origin. International law requires states to protect refugees and not send anyone to a place where they risk being persecuted or seriously harmed. In comparison to a refugee, who is forced to leave his or her country of origin, a migrant is a person who leaves home to seek a new life in another country or region.
What's the problem in the EU right now?
Work permits and visas are necessary to be able to work abroad. And undocumented migrants who have entered a country illegally and don't get asylum are not allowed to stay in the EU. Within the EU, a set of laws is intended to ensure that all EU member states protect the rights of asylum seekers and refugees. The law is setting out minimum standards and procedures for processing asylum applications. But implementation varies throughout EU countries, and some refuse to allow refugees to stay, which has led to tensions. Most asylum seekers want to claim asylum in Germany or other more affluent EU states. But according to the so-called Dublin Regulation, EU member states can choose to return asylum seekers to the country they entered first to process their asylum claim. Some European states, led by Germany, recognized that their strategy of seeking to block refugees moving across borders was unrealistic and harmful. And they worked together to allow migrants to move onwards to the places they wished to reach. But support for this policy began to wane, and some countries along the migrant route began to close their borders. The situation further deteriorated when the EU's decision to transfer 160,000 asylum seekers from Greece and Italy to other European member states was met with widespread resistance, and only a small percentage of the needed transfers actually took place. Increased hostility towards migrants and anti-refugee rhetoric entered the political discourse. German Chancellor Angela Merkel's decision to let so many refugees into the country in 2015 was harshly criticized by far-right groups like the AfD, which was voted into the German parliament as third-largest party last year, mainly due to their anti-refugee platform. Now, Germany's conservative interior minister is opposing Chancellor Merkel, saying he's prepared to close the border to send refugees back to the first European country they entered, like Italy and Greece. Merkel says this would be a betrayal of these countries, which have already borne the brunt of the crisis. She seeks to reach a sustainable, multilateral solution at the EU summit in 2 weeks.
One country that has already changed its policy on refugees is Norway, which actually is not part of the European Union. It has long been hailed as one of the most open countries in terms of accepting refugees and providing aid for war-torn countries such as Syria. However, after a huge influx of migrants in 2015, when lots of migrants also went to Northern Europe, Norway has begun tightening its borders. The Norwegian government now boasts to have the strictest refugee regulations in Europe. These have resulted in a sharp decline in the number of refugees entering the country. Reporter Michael Franzen went to see what that means for those who are hoping to stay in Norway and the people who are dealing with refugees. His documentary is presented by Kathleen Schuster.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello, Michael.
Seek and you shall find. If there's one thing to say about this refugee home outside Oslo, is that it's certainly not easy to find. It's Wednesday morning, just after 9 o'clock, and Ingvild Hilde smiles. It's no surprise to her that visitors often get lost trying to make their way here. She's the manager of this facility in Asker, about an hour's drive from the Norwegian capital.
I have just arrived. Okay. I was here late last night, but today it's a normal day.
Okay.
But we had kind of problems yesterday, so okay. Stayed quite late. A little fight, actually. Yeah.
Okay. Mm.
But it's sold. Yesterday, I just made sure that the security came so that they would stay overnight because of the problems. It was the day before. But then when everyone came back, then I waited for the security. So I just stayed down there until the security came because they all felt threatened. Because the guy in arrest, he got out yesterday evening. Yeah. Mm. So when I woke up this morning, I didn't go to work at 8 o'clock.
Ingvild turns on the computer in her small office and begins her usual routine. Reading emails, checking the digital attendance list. The center, she says, is completely full, stretched to capacity.
We're packed up and we will be packed up for a long time, I guess.
Ingvild points outside to a multi-story building with peeling plaster. That's where families and single women are being housed. The building behind that is for the men without families. 138 asylum seekers in total live here.
They're closing down Mottak, so but this is actually quite full, but we had a disappearance from a couple of people some days ago, so then we got a room available, and then a mother and a child will come on Friday. This one is from Somalia.
But first things first, a coffee. Ingvild grabs 2 cups, one for her and one for Rehab Waiz, a young Syrian asylum seeker who's already waiting in the common room. She's been in Norway in safety since November.
My sister and I came to Norway via Lebanon. Of course, it was dangerous, but thank God nothing happened to us. We swore to each other we would stay together come what may. My sister was always by my side. We gave each other courage and protected one another. As a woman fleeing alone would have been far too dangerous.
Rehab sips her coffee. She's been in Oscar for 3 months, and it's been quite an adjustment. Her first few days here weren't easy. She used to work as an economist in Aleppo, where she's from, a city of millions. Now she's in Oscar, a tiny village. And then there was the snow, heaps of snow for months on end.
I already have my refugee ID card. Now I'm just waiting for a decision from the state refugee authority. It's ongoing. I've called a few times to ask what's happening and if my asylum application has been processed yet. But they just keep saying, you have to be patient. At least I've been able to do a Norwegian language course in Asker. I have 100 hours left. If I'm granted asylum, I'll get more. Ingvild and the others think that as a Syrian, there's a good chance I'll be recognized as a refugee. But the uncertainty is driving me crazy. At night, I lie awake and think, what if they reject me? Can I still go to class, study the language? Or will I be doomed to do nothing, like many, so many others here?
85% of the people staying at the home in Oscar are rejected asylum seekers from Ethiopia, Afghanistan, and Iraq. Those who don't leave the country voluntarily are allowed to stay on at the center, but they won't be able to work legally, take Norwegian lessons, or even go to the dentist. Rehab shakes her head at the prospect. The 23-year-old spends a lot of her time on the internet. Sometimes she calls an old neighbor from Aleppo who now lives in Oslo. She'd like to visit him, but it's not so simple.
Travel to Oslo? Are you joking? I don't have the money to pay for that. My daily allowance is 64 Norwegian crowns, a little less than 7 euros. Don't get me wrong, I'm eternally grateful to the Norwegians for their help, but 64 Norwegian crowns, what am I supposed to do with that? The bus ride into Asker alone to the supermarket is 55 Norwegian crowns, one way. How am I supposed to get to Oslo?
Rehab casts a glance over at Ingvild. It's a dilemma the home's manager is all too familiar with. But she also knows that as a Syrian, Rehab has reason to hope for asylum, just like refugees from Yemen and Eritrea, while those from other countries are routinely rejected.
It's a special situation to work in a refugee camp where actually most of them is not supposed to be here. It makes more trouble because they don't have anything to look forward to. So they get more depressed, more angry, more sad, actually. But honestly, it's so little problem in this mottak. You should have thought it would be so much more. They are really good to take care of themselves. I'm so impressed. But they... Yeah, I don't actually know how they manage to wake up every day and not knowing. They hope for amnesty. Yeah, that's what they hope for. And it's a very long time since that happened, actually.
Ingvild gets up and goes over to Antonia, one of the staff here. Antonia is originally from Germany. She has tattoos on her hands, and half her office is adorned with souvenirs and photos from her many journeys.
I thought, if I had to talk about such difficult things, those who come here should at least see that I've had a lot of experience working with different people and that I love what I do, that I've made contact with many different cultures and I'm not scared of learning something new.
Antonia studied Asian studies in Leipzig, in Germany's east, before traveling around the world. Then her parents migrated to Norway, and she decided to join them. She's been in Oscar since 2014. Her work here isn't easy. She's supposed to persuade asylum seekers whose applications have been rejected to go back voluntarily through so-called motivational interviews.
Motivational interviews are used a lot in psychology. The idea is for people to arrive at the decision that it's in their best interest to leave more or less by themselves.
In a way, Antonia is the friendly face of a not-so-friendly refugee policy. Right-wing populist Sylvie Listhaug, who recently resigned as Norway's justice minister, is proud to point out that her country has the harshest asylum laws in Europe. But for Antonia, these laws make her job tough.
Ich habe in letzter Zeit zwei, drei Fälle gehabt. Es geht um Mütter aus Afghanistan mit Kindern.
I've had two or three cases recently, mothers with children from Afghanistan who've come without their husbands. They didn't get any protection, just got rejected, and they were supposed to travel back to Kabul in Afghanistan. Often, I don't know the full story of why people are rejected. I find it very difficult. Mothers with five children telling me about what it's like to go back to Kabul, that often pushes me to my limits.
Da stoße ich oft an meine Grenzen.
More than once, Antonia has thought about packing everything up and just getting some office job. But that's not the life for her, she says. For now, she wants to continue her work here and keep doing what she usually does when she needs to switch off. Drive out into the Norwegian landscape, surrounded by the solitude of fjords and mountains.
Ich habe selten so eine schöne Natur hier gesehen. Vielleicht das letzte Mal.
Rarely have I seen such beautiful landscapes. The last time was perhaps in the Himalayas, in Nepal. I'm far from being an esoteric person, but I've learned that nature can be very healing. So after one or two cases here at work that have been a bit uglier, a bit heavier, or even dangerous, it's been the best thing for me, before I can even become post-traumatic, just to head out into nature.
From Asker, it takes about an hour and a half by train to get to the capital, Oslo, to the headquarters of Norwegian People's Aid, or the NPA, which runs the asylum accommodation. The humanitarian organization is housed in the Glassmagasinet, a luxury department store in Oslo's city center. It doesn't get much more exclusive than this. There's even a fountain in the foyer. Part of the historical building is filled with designer stores, and the rest is office space. It's nice here, admits NPA General Secretary Henriette Westrin. Nice and practical. The train station is less than 5 minutes' walk away. Henrietta and her team travel regularly, both domestically and abroad. The organization has been running refugee shelters in Norway for more than 20 years on behalf of the state. In 2016, there were 13 such centers. Now, there are just two.
Actually, we had one in a small place called Jølster. It was a further hotel, which now was used as for asylum centers. It's written a book about it, actually, which has the name Jølster Hotel. And there they really managed to include the refugee center in the municipality. People living there were part of the local football club. They could have a new football team for the first time in many years because they had now enough men who was playing football.
An aid organization operating a refugee shelter? It's a setup that probably doesn't sit well with Henrietta's former colleagues in the Socialist Left Party. But the social worker, who for 8 years served as state secretary in the last government, doesn't object. She says, better an NGO than a commercial provider seeking to make a profit. That's the first point, Henrietta says. And here's the second.
We can say that we know a 13-year-old girl. She had to move 7 times. And we know a family with 6 children who's almost living in poverty because they get so little economy. And we know that those young boys from Afghanistan, how afraid they are, how they are screaming at night, so that we make politics not being just politics, but we make it be concrete histories about real human persons. So in that way, I hope that the way we work with running asylum centers also can be a help for those who want a political change toward a little bit more open borders and more solidarity.
More open borders, greater solidarity. These are ideas most of Norway's 5 million inhabitants don't agree with. According to a recent survey, 2 out of 3 Norwegians support the country's strict refugee policies.
Yes, for sure it is. And we say that we can just run asylum centers if we can run them with such a good quality that we can say that we know that we take care of these people in a good way. And now the government are so pushy on price that we are saying we are on the border of what we can continue to do or not. We cannot continue just running two centers in the long run. That's not sustainable. Because, as I said, we do not do this to earn money, but it must be break-even. We can't take money that we got for running activities in an African country and use them running refugee centers back here in Norway.
A stone's throw away from the Glass Magazinet is where the headquarters of the Norwegian Directorate of Immigration, the UDI, is located. And yet the difference could hardly be more stark. At this government agency, at Hausmannsgate 21, it's the bureaucrats who are in charge. Frode Forfang is the UDI's director general.
I don't think I would like to characterize the policies. That's for the politicians to do, to characterize or to judge on what is the right policy. But what is correct is that it has been stricter over the last few years, after 2015. It has been stricter, actually, gradually for many years. But especially since 2015, it has been stricter in many different ways. Not just the asylum in a more narrow sense, but also family reunification.
It's Friday afternoon, just after 1 p.m., The director's office has an austere look. It fits the straightforward attitude of the administrator. He's just flown in from Malta, from a European Union meeting of the heads of national refugee agencies. Although Norway is not in the EU, it is still closely associated with the bloc.
There are people who are asking, why are the numbers so low in Norway, and why have the Norwegian numbers decreased more than other European, the situation in other European countries? I think one difference between the Scandinavian countries and the rest of Europe is that we have still border controls in place, which are not watertight, but it makes it at least a bit more difficult. It's not that easy like it was before. Before you could just travel to whatever country you wanted to travel to without any limitations. There are more hurdles on the way to our country.
Forfang says Norway has everything under control. He rattles off some statistics. In 2015, there were more than 30,000 asylum seekers. In 2017, there were just 3,500. The numbers haven't been this low since the mid-90s. Last year, Norway deported more rejected Afghan asylum seekers than any other European country, both in percentage and absolute numbers. But that's come at a price, and not only for the rejected Afghans who, in 7 out of 10 cases, are forced to flee again after their return to Afghanistan. The UDI has also been struggling. Last year, Forfang had to cut costs by around 15%.
What my worry right now is that if the number of asylum seekers should increase again, especially if it happens over a short period of time, then we would have some challenges because we have reduced the capacity to such a level that we don't have much room for maneuver if something happens. It's a big challenge to increase the capacity, but it is also quite challenging to reduce the capacity. Because it needs that, we need to do a lot of changes in the organization. We have office space that we have to vacate. We have units and departments that needs to change due to the lower number of caseworkers. So there are a lot of challenges we are facing when we have to make such big changes over a short period of time.
It is hard to be optimistic these days.
That's Paul Nessa. His views differ a lot from the UDI bosses. He's the chief advisor of the relief organization, the Norwegian Refugee Council, and describes himself as an optimist. But he says he has serious misgivings about the direction the government is heading in.
We've joined the rest of the gang, unfortunately. Norway still does a lot of good work internationally for refugees, but when it comes to the responsibility on our side of also sharing responsibility with taking some refugees here, with looking for better European solutions, better cooperation, division of burden, but also division of responsibility, then Norway has gone in a different and new direction. And we find from our side that there is quite a discrepancy between what we say internationally and what we say in Norway.
Nessa has worked in many places with different people and cultures. He was in Vietnam, Mozambique, and Central America. He's been involved in frequent debates with politicians, including former immigration minister Sylvie Listhaug, about what people call the refugee problem.
Maybe the most important, that refugees are generally okay people. They have capacities. Here in Norway, the system has been far too bureaucratic. People have been waiting, doing nothing. They get very pacified. Whereas you should really encourage activities, get into the workforce as quickly as possible.
Selma Silmi has already had her fair share of experience with Norwegian bureaucracy. It's early in the evening at Café Nord near Oslo's town hall. The 40-year-old Egyptian collapses into one of the grey designer armchairs. She's exhausted. She's just come from her job working as a temp in a local hospital.
This is not my career. You should push me about my career, get a master, get focus about human rights. This is my career. Not to wash palette, to work a restaurant. This is not my career. Sometimes I feel in routine, some routine in Middle East. I surprised because I thought in Europe you can push me in about human rights, about, but we have sorry, we have routine, we have system.
Selma's eyes sparkle. A lawyer by profession, she says her Norwegian friends always tell her not to get upset, that it won't do her any favors in Norway, but she can't help it. She says it's the same way she felt on the Sinai Peninsula when she saw how the rights of the Bedouins were being violated. She ended up on the Egyptian government's blacklist. She was granted asylum by Norway in 2015, thanks to help from Dugnad, the Norwegian volunteer network for refugee academics. She attended compulsory public education lessons and learned how to become a good Norwegian.
One day, my teacher say for us in class, actually we didn't need to lawyers, doctors, engineers. We need workers, just workers. I think I don't forget these sentences because I shocked. For many students in class, it's okay. But for me, okay, this is student can work as a server, can many job. One day, my contact person say, okay, now you can work as a nurse. But after that, when you get your money, you can study contents about your dream about human rights, but now you should get a job and depend yourself. But now, actually, I feel in jail because I should go to these places. If I don't go till places, they cut money for me, for my family, and this is horrible for me.
Automatically, Selma turns around. She doesn't want anyone in the cafe to overhear what she's saying. She's still grateful to Norway and Norwegian, she says, and the fact that she doesn't have to worry about her daughter, Ranat, who will soon turn 14.
All time I told my daughter, this is the beginning. It's difficult, but we will arrive. But this is the beginning. We should work. We should, because I need to, my daughter will be strong to continue in life, not see her mom or her father. But actually all time I'm stressed because I should all time the system pressure of me. You should go to get a job. You should.
Selma gets up. It's time to go. She's heading to the subway, home to her husband and daughter. She hopes that one day soon she'll be able to speak up again as a lawyer in Norway, the country of her dreams.
This in-depth look at Norway's refugee policy was compiled by Michael Franzen, and the presenter was Kathleen Schuster. To listen again to this and other editions of World in Progress, go to dw.com/worldinprogress or download our podcast from iTunes or SoundCloud. More globalization stories on Facebook at DW Global Society. Thanks for joining me. We'll be back next week. Until then, on behalf of the studio team here in Bonn, Germany, all the best from me, Anke Rasper, and take care. Keep your head up, keep your heart strong.